Hello and welcome to the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, where we listen to people's fairy encounters. But take heed, we're not talking about winged Tinkerbells here. These are real fairies, real encounters that took people like you and I by surprise. Stay a while and hear their stories. My name is Jo Hickey Hall, and I'm a folklore researcher. Dear listener, I hope you're well. It's very hard to focus on seasonal festivities this year when we can see the worst atrocities taking place. It's a real struggle, makes us feel helpless, and that can lead us to lose hope. But I just want to add that what I'm also noticing is people gathering everywhere with intentions of love and refusing to be shut down, showing solidarity with those suffering, checking in with each other to make sure we're all okay, and that deep knowing of what is really wrong and what really isn't working. And I believe it's forcing people to wake up to what is actually important to them and holding loved ones closer. And we are making space in our hearts for our brothers and sisters in need, wherever they are in the world. I'm on a psychotherapy training course the last few months, and something quite mind-blowing happened last month. I was meditating and I decided to move my attention to my heart area and experience the space in my heart. I'd never done this before. As soon as I did, I was taken aback by the sheer expanse we have in our hearts. I usually place my attention at my third eye when I'm meditating and feel myself leave the body. And this is something I've done for years, and I just find it really spacious there, and to take some peaceful time there, that indigo chakra. And I don't know why I'd never tried the same with my heart. But try this and you'll see what I mean. Once I was there, I tried a few experiments, like what could I fit in this heart space? Could I fit all the people I love and still have room? Could I fit all the people who I find it hard to love? And then I tried fitting all the people who are suffering. And yes, it still felt like I could do that. It was a real epiphany for me. I never knew how infinitely able we are to love everyone. It's not always easy to do it, but we can do it. It's a process for sure, particularly at the moment. But even trying that for a matter of minutes helped me. We are at the magical time of solstice, and you are about to hear the most astounding share. It helps to believe in the magic of this world, especially at times like this. Throughout history, we as human beings communed with the land, much the same as we might have communed with divinities. It was the same approach and a similar relationship. We've largely forgotten this, but we soon remember when we really feel a location reaches into our hearts and lifts our spirits. We've all been to certain locations that just move us to emotion with a strong sense of connection. The experience in this episode was a meeting with an otherworldly beast that had the body of a fat pony, but with a man's face. This took place at winter solstice, when the boundaries between our material realm and that of the other realms bend. And at this time, and as with other turns in the cycle at spring and autumn equinox and summer solstice, at Imalc, Beltane, Lunasar and Samhain, we are shifting gear and transitioning towards the new. The full-length episode on Patreon includes another encounter with the same person, and that was with a being related again to a horse, this time a white horse, and an altogether different experience, one aligned with love and beauty. I feel that heart union between people can shift the world. I truly believe that. And in that story, perhaps their love for each other and for the land invoked the presence of the lady, potentially a physical manifestation of a sacred location or a beautiful setting. To hear that full-length version, find us on Patreon. I want to thank my incredible Curious Crew on Patreon for supporting me this year and ensuring this project continues to exist. for you and all listeners. It has been great to discuss ideas together and share information. I've got to know many of you over the months and years, and you are my dear friends. It really feels like a warm, safe community, and I'm so heartened to see how much you respect and support each other too, in the Zooms and community chats. We will be meeting this very night for the Christmas get-together on Zoom, and next month's Zoom we will be with the guest from this episode, and they're going to be joining us and sharing some of their magical practices with us, so I hope you can join us for that. I hope you enjoy this episode, and I will see you at the end for a quick chat.
It was in 2013, in winter, December, and me and my then partner, we just wanted to get away from all the pre-Christmas stress, just a couple of days around the winter solstice. And I found on the internet this lovely isolated cottage or little farmhouse, and it was in like the rural part of Lower Austria. I don't know if you're familiar with Austria. We have like these famous sites like Vienna and Salzburg and the mountain areas. And then there are like really rural areas nobody really knows. And that was one of them. And it's like a 1.5 hours drive away from where I live now. And it's really in the middle of nowhere. And me and my then partner, we went there. And the weather was all right, but it was really cold. And we arrived there at around noon or early afternoon. And it was literally like in the middle of nowhere. It was like a little tiny cottage. Or we have these things, mostly they belong to farmhouses, bigger farmhouses. We call press houses. And that's where like people used to press the fruits for making cider or this kind of cider.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe it was like a gatehouse or something. So it definitely belonged to a bigger farm, but we couldn't see the farm. Like it was like probably a part of an estate, but this was this tiny, tiny cottage. It was surrounded by a lovely garden, and around the garden, there was like on one side the street, and on the other side, there were like this deep forest, like a forest, yeah. And we couldn't see any other houses. It was like situated in a valley. And yeah, when we arrived, there were like the owner and his wife. And the house looked really all right and lovely. They had the fire crackling in the fireplace.
Sounds good.
Yeah, especially now. It's really freezing here in Austria as well. So, they introduced themselves, and they felt kind of hostile and unfriendly. And at the time I thought, well, probably they expected like a heterosexual couple, and they didn't expect like a same-sex couple. But now I'm not sure if it really was that. I'm just not sure. And they had the wife brought this lovely big plate of Christmas bakery, like this traditional Christmas
bakery. Yeah.
And she left it with us, so I guess it was all right. But they really looked like unfriendly, and the atmosphere was kind of hostile. Yeah, so they showed us around and they gave us the keys, and they left. And I remember we spent the afternoon like packing away our stuff and preparing something to eat and just checking out the garden. And my then partner was a heavy smoker. He spent a lot of time in the garden, just smoking one cigarette after the other, which is really unhealthy. Don't do that at home. Yeah. And then in the evening, it starts snowing. It turned it almost into that kind of snowstorm. It was really stormy and heavy snowfall. So even my partner went inside.
He snowed off.
Yeah, he did. And we spent the evening sitting in this kitchen lounge area, like a parlor. There was a parlor and this kitchen upstairs, there was a bedroom. And the house was really old with like really low ceilings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Tiny windows, yeah. And this kind of dark wooden traditional Austrian furniture.
Lovely.
It was lovely, but as it got darker, it was kind of like this weird atmosphere.
Yeah.
And anyway, we spent the evening there. I was reading and we had an argument, but I don't know what it was about. It was like, I have to say, it was like at the time our relationship was crumbling away already. So it was a difficult time.
Yeah.
For him and for me, especially for me, it was like the day before that, 2012, one of my sisters died.
Oh, gosh.
It was like a really difficult time. Oh, and in 2013, I was starting my own business. I'm a trained social worker and I'm running like training courses now and working as an external lecturer.
Oh, fantastic.
At university. But at the time I was just starting that. And
yeah.
I guess you know what I'm talking about. It's like the first part of like it's really difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a difficult time. And we had a lot of arguments at that time. Maybe it was just like, I was just thinking, I reckon that was our last trip together, our last holiday. So
yeah.
Maybe it's just the last try.
The ending, yes.
Yeah, the ending, yeah. Mm. I think we split up like the next year, but in March or something. So
yeah.
We only had like a couple of months left, yeah.
So it was the winter solstice. So that's really interesting. And the end of something, the beginning of something new too, yeah, for you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. And we just spent this kind of awkward evening together.
Mm.
And I reckon it must have been between 11 and midnight. And we got like tired a bit. But all of a sudden, my then partner pointed toward one of the windows. And he was like, look, look. And as I was looking, I was seeing a face of a man, really like shaggy hair and a really grim expression, like if he was angry. And he had these weird ears, like animal ears. And he was just staring at us. And I could see him as clear as I can see you now.
Yeah.
Like, right in front of the window. And we were scared, but it was like, not like you would imagine it, us to be scared, yeah? Because like I would say 10 minutes before that, the atmosphere changed and it got really weird. It was really, really quiet in the house and quiet outside. And we were just hearing these kind of bells, like you would hear in Christmas movies, like,
yes.
When Santa arrives, you can always hear those bells.
So like more of a tinkling sort of.
Yeah, a tinkling sound, yeah. Mm. And then we saw this face of this man, and he was like pale, but his face was surrounded. I wouldn't say it was a beard like my beard, but it was surrounded by shaggy fur. And a dark fur, like brownish black fur. And his face was pale, really pale and wrinkly. And he had these evil, glaring eyes and really sharp teeth.
Yeah.
And we had this shock moment where we're like, oh, look, look. And were just staring at him. And then he turned away and seemed to vanish within the snow outside. And we ran to the window and opened it. And then we saw him. And it was like not really a him. It was like a horse, or I always say it looked like a fat pony.
Right. Like
a really bulky horse-like figure with this human head.
Wow.
And it was running in circles around the garden and making these funny bell noises.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And we were shouting something just to make it go away, but it wouldn't go away. And it was just turned around and staring at us really angrily. Yeah. And after time, like, it was circling the whole house. Felt like, I don't know, it felt for ages. But then the snow got really bad, and it all came. The wind was blowing the snowflakes inside, and we shut the windows. And then, and that was so weird, we just decided to go upstairs to the bedroom. And we did. Mm-hmm. And we lay there for, like, I don't know, hours or something. Yeah, we hardly got any sleep.
Yeah,
but we didn't really talk. We just said, well, that's weird, that's scary, that's frightening, but we didn't really talk about that.
Mm.
And now I'm wondering why we didn't, but
yeah,
we just didn't. And anyway, the next day, I remember we got up really early, as you can imagine. I'm really tired. And we just said that was weird last night, but we wouldn't talk about that really. And we had this one day there to go, and I can't really remember. I think we went for a walk or something. But when we stepped outside the house and went into the garden, which was like really full of snow, we saw these hoof marks in the snow. So
yeah.
There was this proof. And again, we were like, oh, that's weird. But yeah, just move on with our walk. Yeah. And we just went on a walk through the forest, which felt kind of hostile too. Yeah. And I don't really remember how we spent the whole day. It was an awkward situation, not very pleasant. And the next day, we were supposed to leave, and just left the keys on the table, on the kitchen table. But when we signed the guest book they had, yeah, I found the page like from summer, not all the year before. I can't remember the date, but there was this. I think it was a children's drawing. Yeah? I think it must have been a child that drew that image of exactly the same creature or entity we saw. It was this like horse-like creature with a human head.
Mm.
And that really freaked me out. But,
yeah.
But again, like you said, well, that's really, really frightening. That's so scary. Just go. Yeah, just go home. And we just left, yeah. But again, didn't really talk about that much.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically it in a nutshell, like the whole
yeah.
And as I wrote to you, I almost forgot about the whole thing. And it was only recently when I came across your podcast, yeah, it that triggered really that memory.
Wow.
And so, oh my God, that is so weird, yeah.
How does it feel for you to talk about that first experience? What are you feeling in your body while you're telling that story?
It felt good sharing it with you, but
yeah.
It also felt like looking back on a really dark time in my life.
Mm.
I'm so happy that it's over. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like. talking about it, I felt it like in my stomach.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's looking at, and thank you for that, because it, you know, I can feel it too when you're when you're describing it to me. I can just see it. And the difference between that first experience and the second, and the kind of reflection on the love relationship you were in at the time, and how that just really wasn't working out, you know, coming to an end. It's interesting to look at the winter solstice itself, because I really felt this last year for the first time. I kind of had a realization about how in the summer solstice that we celebrate, it's a very potent time and it's extremely external. We're going out, we are, you know, dancing, we are celebrating, and we're doing that with others. There's a lot of joy. In the winter solstice, it's just as potent, but it's happening kind of at a deeper level. Sometimes it's happening exactly deep within us. Yeah, because we go within. Mm-hmm. And that's where we connect with the potency of that time. And for me, I've come to realize how immensely powerful and transitional that time is, mm-hmm. if we open to it. And consciously or unconsciously, you decided to go to this place. If we start with the idea that everything begins in our consciousness, then the two of you made this trip there. I mean, externally or consciously, you weren't aware, I'm sure, when you booked that time, that you were about to have a great loss. And I'm so sorry to hear that you went through that with the loss of your sister, which must have been incredibly traumatic and shocking. And so you, but this place, I imagine, was already booked,
mm-hmm.
that you were going there. And so the timing, because there's no such thing as kind of the linear time that we are experiencing on this plane. It doesn't work like that. The fact that, right, that you have made a retreat to this place at that time. And who knows what these people, what was going through their minds when they seemed to behave in a way that you couldn't quite figure out. I mean, whether they have their prejudices or whether they were mindful that you were about to enter into an experience, you know, and, you know, are these people going to have an experience that might upset them? And they were perhaps anxious about that. And that was the anxiety you're picking up on. It's hard to say, but
maybe they just felt pity, or they pitied us, maybe, because they were like, maybe very sensitive to what was going to happen.
Maybe. But if they were, wouldn't they have seen the comments in the book? And if they were anxious about that, would they have tried to remove it in some way? You know, because they must have seen it there.
They must have seen it, because within the guest book, everyone could see it.
And
I think they must have flipped through it at some point.
Yeah, exactly. One thing I wondered was, because obviously you were there at winter solstice, and I wonder when these other guests were there that drew.
I don't know. It was just like, I remember it was like maybe 10 or, it was like not the other page. It was like
way back.
Way back, yeah. So maybe it was, but I didn't check the date.
No.
I was just so shocked because I just saw the drawing, and I was just like, oh my God. And I was showing it to my partner, and he was like, oh my God. We were both like,
Do you know what? You've reminded me of something as well, because we stayed in, I think it was 2 years ago now, we stayed in an Airbnb.
Yeah.
And aside from having, you know, one or two dodgy bookings in the past, I've never stayed anywhere where it did feel uncomfortable, although on the surface it looked like a really nice place. But I hardly slept. I was lying there awake, and I ended up getting up and doing a clearing, because it was so strong in that place that you know, I felt it very strongly, and it wasn't a nice energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to get up and do something about it. But funny enough, that's the only Airbnb where the owners, the woman that had kind of shown us around, she was a bit funny as well. And I thought at the time, I was thinking, what was she being funny about? And it made me think at the time, she's a bit unfriendly.
Same thing, yeah.
So it's now it's making me think maybe that's why she was being like that too. Because at first I thought, because some people don't like you to, if you're only staying for a couple of nights, you know, they like you to stay for, and I was thinking, is it that? Were we noisy? I don't know. Like, what is it? But now I'm thinking.
She didn't inform you, right?
No. Okay.
Yeah, no. Maybe it was the same thing.
Maybe people have said.
There was something dodgy going on.
Yeah, maybe people have said to them before, by the way, this is, you know, because I very nearly said to her, there's a bit of a funny energy in this house, but I just got the impression she didn't want to know. And so now I'm wondering. But anyway, that aside, just thinking about kind of being there, and when we have these experiences, and going back to this idea that within our human understanding, we might look at that and say, oh, well, that's evil. But actually, they're not, they just are. They're just existing. They're not trying to, well, this is one way to look at it anyway, one perspective, that they're not trying to scare us. But in the same way that nature will cook up a really strong wind and terrify us, or a whole horse might bolt and we get that extreme fear, is just nature being itself. Mm. And when these beings appear to us in this humanoid form, it strikes us at a really deep level. Mm. And we kind of almost think, well, they must have been trying to scare us out of there. But another perspective to take might be that this being was kind of reflecting back at you maybe the angst and the difficulties that you were experiencing in your relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, that could be one way that it maybe was kind of reflecting back at you what was actually going on between you at the time on a deep level, and that at that time being winter solstice, where we go very deep to actually see what is it that has taken place this cycle, what is it that is potentially beginning, that has maybe ended. And because we're in the dark there, it's kind of forcing us to face things, mm-hmm. you know, definitely encouraging us to do so anyway. Yeah. So perhaps that's another way maybe to look at what was going on there.
That would make perfect sense. And as you were talking right now, I was thinking there's this tradition in Austria. I don't know if you heard about it. It's called Perchenlauf. And those are like this Krampus devilish-like figures, which represent like, I think they represent like winter and but again the cycle, and they are meant to frighten children. Mm. Now it's a real tradition. Like people dress up here as Perchen, we call it, and funny enough, the word comes from Perchter, which is like another word for Frau Holle, or like Mother Holle, like this fairy tale figure. And here in the mountains, in Austria, we call it Perchter, which translates to the bride one, which is like the goddess Bridget, probably. Yeah?
Oh, gosh, yes.
But we call these things Perchen, like, and they're not bride. They are men dressed up like devils.
Yeah.
And they would run around, like they run around Christmas and around the 5th of January. And I think in the beginning of December as well. So all around the Christmas time, you have these traditions here. And they represent, I think, that dark side you were referring to. But
yes,
they're different than the entity we saw. Yeah, they have shaggy fur as well, but then nothing horse-like. They're more like a devil or something with horns and really like these masks that the men would dress up with, furs and masks and horns.
The figure of the Krampus is well known in European alpine areas like Austria, Germany, Slovenia and Hungary. The tradition is that on the eve of 5th of December, this large, hairy, goat-horned figure may appear and at worst may carry away naughty children in his wicker basket, or at best beat them with birch sticks or terrify them into submission as well-behaved good children. The festival of the Perchtenlauf in Austria is a similar tradition, so that villagers will dress as these figures, Krampus and Perchten, and parade through the towns. The Perchtenlauf usually consists of two sets of monsters nowadays, one good, one evil, but each of these figures were usually about chasing out winter spirits and battling out with each other, and that usually takes place near the solstice or beginning of January, and of course that battle reflects the dark being overtaken once more by light at the turn of the solstice, where the days begin to get longer again. So this time of year is long associated with monsters or demons turning up and wreaking havoc.
From the darkness comes light, of course. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of universal truth. It's how we work with the seasons as well, because on that winter solstice, of course, it's then the sun returning, which, mm-hmm. you know, the of course feeds into the idea of Christmas and, you know, the sun being born, because it's the sun being reborn, the S-U-N being reborn, as you know. So but the, you know, the hooves in the snow is very reminiscent, very famous case,
the devil's footprints. This is taken from the Chambers Dictionary of the Unexplained. An intriguing 19th century case from Devon involving the appearance of a set of mysterious footprints in the snow that reportedly stretched in an unbroken line across several parishes. Now, this happened in February 1855, and the residents of Topsham and Totnes in South Devon awoke to find a line of footprints in the snow. Now, it followed a continuous meandering course, and this is how it was reported in the Times just a week later. The track appeared more like that of a biped than a quadruped, and the steps were generally 8 inches in advance of each other. The impression of the feet closely resembled that of a donkey's shoe, and measured from 1.5 inches to, in some instances, 2.5 inches across. Here and there it appeared as if cloven, but in the generality of the steps the shoe was continuous, and from the snow in the centre remaining entire, merely showing the outer crest of the foot, it must have been convex. So these tracks were made by something which could travel over the rooftops, through or over walls, and through narrow drain pipes. And the tracks were said to stop on one side of the Exe estuary, only to continue again on the other side, so maybe something that could fly across. And at certain points in the journey, the tracks appeared to go up to and then away from the doors of houses, which is interesting for our story. The incident certainly caused something of a stir at the time. The newspaper coverage brought forth more claims and numbers of theories as to the cause. The scientific community made suggestions ranging from escaped kangaroos to hot air balloon trailing a rope or chain. However, most of these seemed to be almost as far-fetched as the idea among the more superstitious locals that the footprints were evidence of a visit from the devil.
There's this energy being whipped up outside as it spins around and around and around, and these tinkling bells, so you're getting a sound effect too. When I spoke to a guy last year, he told me about his experience with Santa Claus. And, you know, he was a grown man. I think he was in his early 20s. And he had this whole experience of what seemed to be like a sleigh landing on the roof.
And he I remember the episode.
Right. And, you know, he got this sound effect there too, these tinkling bells. And it can be a feature of fairy encounters, is that people will hear these bells. So there's something about that too, isn't there? That there's this, it kind of marks a shift. And also that you said that it was silent, that suddenly there was a strange feeling as if you'd kind of maybe shifted into some other kind of either realm or sense where things went quiet. And then, really, you know, really he appears.
Quiet. You couldn't hear a thing. It went completely quiet, this kind of otherworldly quietness, I would say.
Yes.
Because remembering the whole situation, we had like the fire still going in the fireplace. It must have been like, you know, fire makes sounds. It makes all this crackling and cracking sound. But there wasn't any of it. It was just completely quiet. Like, that was so weird. And could hear these bells ringing.
Yeah. Do you think that there was any kind of time loss that night, or does it seem to make sense in terms of when he appeared, that was at dusk or darker?
It was, I would say it was around midnight.
Right.
It was like, yeah, because, you know, it was winter solstice, so it's the longest night, so it must be like, it felt like midnight. I can't really tell. But it had been a long time where we were just sitting in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Just reading, having this argument I told you about. Probably we had some food as well, but I can't really remember. But it was like, it was a time where we would say, like, shortly before we would have normally said, well, just go to bed now. Yeah.
So yeah.
I reckon it must have been like between 11 and midnight. Maybe it was like 10 o'clock and, or between 10 o'clock and midnight. I can't really tell. I can't remember. But it was like in the middle of the night, I would say.
Yes. Yes. And when he looked at you, do you remember anything about his eyes at all?
Yeah, they were like really dark eyes. Yeah. I would say they were dark red almost, but not like a red, glowing red, like my eyes or your eyes, but in a really dark shade of red. And my interpretation was he was staring at us angrily, but because of all the wrinkles and his the facial expression. I can't really tell.
But that was the feeling that
what you said before. It might have been like all this dark energy or this energy of parting or something breaking apart. Maybe that. Yeah. But he was just staring at us and it felt really frightening in a way. But it was at the same time, having said that, at the same time, it was clear to both of us, he wasn't about to attack us. He was not like, you know, smashing the windows and jumping into the kitchen. And I don't know, we were fully aware that there's nothing going to happen to us in the sense of getting physically damaged. Or something.
Yes, but it was just a very weird situation.
Yeah.
That it sounds like it left you dumbstruck afterwards. It sounds like you're kind of just completely, And you know, you hear about this kind of effect with people that have seen, you know, otherworldly beings in the form of what are described as aliens, where, you know, they see something and they don't sort of sit there. People don't tend to react in the way that. Excuse me, that some people think that they might, because you hear these stories and you think, oh, if that was me, I'd sit there and we'd be chatting about it all night and we would, you know, try and take pictures of it. And
that's what you would think you would do, but you don't,
No, it's kind of like an immobilization. You go into a different kind of state. I don't suppose you took any photos of the hoof marks or the guest book then. No,
we didn't. Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't. That again, I would normally say, just grab your mobile and take some pics, but we didn't, which is weird because I don't know. At the time, we definitely had mobiles, but like not the smartphones, but like the old ones. And they you could take pictures with them.
I know. I was trying to remember that as well, because I've always been a bit behind with my phones. So. But yeah, I just made some notes while you were talking. And I can't even read my own writing now. Yes, when you went into the forest the next day, I mean, how did that feel? Was it the forest that was nearest where you were staying, or did you go further afield?
No, it was just like the forest that surrounded the garden of the house. And it was like there was no real path, or it was like it wasn't like this nice forest where you could just walk around and stroll around. It was like this deep, dense forest with a lot of trees, like pine trees and stuff like that. Not pine trees. What is this? Like the normal Christmas tree is, what is it called?
Useless at remembering things. I know what you mean. The fir trees.
Fir trees.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was looking for that word. Yeah. My English is getting a bit rusty, so it's very cute.
My memory is terrible. So between the two of us, we're doing really well.
Well, we're getting there. So that's the point. Yes. the fir trees. A lot of fir trees, and you know, when you're in a forest full of fir trees, it's not like a nice walk around. You're just like trying to maneuver through the trees, and there was like a lot of snow, and it wasn't like this pleasant nice walk. It was more like an expedition or something.
A bit of a challenge.
And it was really challenging. And I remember we were absolutely soaked when we came back to the house. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we just had to warm up and stuff. It was like really cold and wet .
But it's interesting that you even decided to go in, because I'm not sure when this being, he went round and round and round and then shot off. Did he go in a particular direction, and would it have been in the direction of the forest or the woods?
Because it was like in the beginning he was like running in circles, and then he was circling the whole house.
Really?
And at one point he just disappeared, or like behind the house somewhere. He would just like appear again and again in front of one of those windows. Well, like the house was tiny, so you had like these, like I think it was 6 or 8 tiny windows.
Yeah.
And now and again, you would see the creature or the entity, like,
it's marvelous, isn't it? It's absolutely marvelous. Was he running clockwise or anti-clockwise, or Widdershins, as I might refer to it? I can't remember. I mean, I feel like I'm tending to sort of lean towards... And I don't know, so I'm just offering this, but I'm tending to lean towards that he's kind of undoing a relationship that's broken. And in fact, sort of, in a sense, that's kind of a blessing, because it's the truth.
Yeah.
It's difficult to look at, isn't it? And it's awful, especially, you know, when we're splitting up with somebody. It's very hard indeed, and it's something that sometimes we'll try and avoid or put off for some time, because it's so hurtful. Particularly at a time like Christmas too, when, you know, there's lots of family get-togethers, and you have to sort of, you know, potentially put on a bit of a face because you're in company and all of that. You're under these kind of societal pressures, aside from the fact that it is just heartbreaking. So I just wonder if this was you know, because you were setting something new up in your life as well that you were going to step into. And did you find that that was, how did you find that? Was that a positive shift for you?
Yeah.
Did that?
Yeah. And I remember at the time, it wasn't like that night, but at the time, in that time of the year or in that winter, it often crossed my mind, in a sense, I need to, like, break up, or we need to break up. I need to finish this relationship in order to get all my stuff together, all my power back here to put it into my business.
Yeah. And
that's what happened in the end. We split up. Like, I had regained all the power to put into my business and made it running. And that happened. I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
So it was the start of something new. But at the time, I couldn't see it that way. It was more like, you know what it's like when you split up. It's like you're in two minds about it, and it's like really difficult. On one side, you want to split up. On the other side, it's like, what's next to come?
Yeah. Exactly. There's feelings there, and hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that he spotted it first too.
He did, yeah.
And he drew your attention to it, and kind of what was going on in him at the time. Like, maybe, you know, he knew this was coming at deep within. He knew this was coming. And, you know, another way to look at it is that this is kind of an aspect of how he was feeling as well. And it sounds like perhaps for a while you were literally going in circles with your relationship.
We definitely did.
Yeah. Did you, and I know you said you didn't kind of respond in the way that you felt you might have done, but did you say to each other, what is that about? Did you get to that point of discussion? What do you think that was about?
We did, but we didn't really have a discussion about it. It was more like, what is this about? What could that be?
Mm.
But we left it at that. We wouldn't talk about it like in a proper conversation. It was more like having all the, or just asking each other some kind of question. What do you think it is? And I remember my then partner said, well, I don't know. What do you think it is? I've got no idea.
Yeah.
With ghost or with creature or demon or I don't know. But it didn't feel like a ghost. It was like as real as you and me.
Yeah.
We saw the hoof marks. We could, like, you could almost touch it. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you've got the sound effects, you've got the hoof marks, and you know, these are a feature in these otherworldly beings that are part of nature. They're just part of this world like we are. It's just very, very simple. Yeah. And, you know, we tend to think of these beings that don't exist in the same way in this physical material realm as we do, that because they can sort of flip between the realms, we imagine that they don't leave a trace, but they do affect sometimes. They do leave hoof marks and feet marks. They can be heard. They can affect, you know, the foliage around them. They can, you know, affect, they can make the trees move if they're passing through that way. You know, you think about the Bigfoot with the knocking on the trees as well, and obviously leaving footprints. And you use the word demon, and this is interesting because if we kind of look, you know, in history, the church called these beings demons. Mm-hmm. Anything that was of that ilk would be labeled demonic, when in actual fact, these beings are just parts of nature, as I say. And it's almost like we've kind of, in doing that, in demonizing nature, we have discarded it. Either we're told to be afraid of it, that we shouldn't kind of venture into, you know, that there's this wildness of nature that, yes, it should be respected. But a lot of the time now, it's either just completely disrespected, ignored, or we're made to think somehow it's dangerous in some way. Yeah. And even things like if we're foraging, there's this huge amount, or you know, collecting wild growing herbs for our medicines, it's, oh no, that's dangerous, don't do that, it's dangerous, you know, these aspects of and of course there's always going to be there is going to be risk, and people need to know what they're doing, but nature is nature, and there's a lot there that is there for us.
And we are part of nature as well.
We are part of it, exactly. We are part of it, and it is part of us.
Yeah.
And there's this communion that goes on, as you experienced in both situations. There's this communion where the solstice and, you know, things happening at twilight, if the circumstances align, we can have these communion, this mm-hmm. communion with nature. And we have so much to learn. And it's a two-way thing. You know, we can go to these places as you've been going, and, you know, perhaps you can leave an offering there where you saw this beautiful female form that was leading the horse. You could perhaps leave an offering there, and then you start to have a relationship, and then you really start to realize, I mean, to people that haven't done that before, it sounds a bit mad. Like, how can you go to somewhere and start forming a relationship with nature? Just try it. And it doesn't have to be out in the wilds anywhere. It could be somewhere in your local park where you just are drawn to a particular tree and you just trust that, or a particular part of the stream. Oh, I like this little spot here, I'm just going to stay here. And if you keep visiting there, you'll find that it is like a friend, and that can give you solace, particularly through difficult times, somewhere you can go, and you will start to receive wisdom from that place. You might then notice that perhaps there's, you know, at the moment, or there's slightly going at the moment, but there's hawthorn berries around. So I've been exploring some new green spaces near where I live, and there's some hawthorn berries there. So one way of getting to know, and obviously make sure you're IDing, because every red berry isn't a hawthorn, I have to say that, but you need to know what you're looking for. The hawthorn leaf is very identifiable, so that's quite a good place to start. But, you know, I'll go for a walk there, I'll kind of check out this place, and then I'll bring some hawthorn berries home, and I'll make a tea. And so I'm ingesting that place, and I'm getting to know it consciously. Yeah. So that's something nice to do sometimes. And, you know, I might go there and do a bit of litter picking. I went there this morning, this particular place, and you know, tending for the place. It's a two-way thing. And then you go there and you receive, and then you go there and you offer. And it's this ever-evolving, through the seasons, relationship that it sounds like you have with this place that's near you now, that, you know, you and your husband can go to and receive a real nice sense of connection.
It's a lovely thought. And when you were just talking about the hawthorn, we have this folklore thing. The hawthorn is closely connected to either the Virgin Mary in Austria now in Christian times, or to female supernatural beings in a lot of stories. Austrian folk tales, I would say, we have this connection.
Yes. Well, it's definitely a fairy tree. I'd love to read some of the folklore. So if you can send that to me, I'd love to read that, and I'll share it with viewers and listeners too.
I will. And when I prepared for this little chat,
yes.
I was Googling Lower Austria and mythology horses, and I came across a website or images on the net, which really freaked me out. Did I send you the picture of this?
I don't think so, no. I'll just check.
I just sent it to you via email. Because I found a church, which is, funny enough, it's called St. Michael's Church, my name. It's right next to the Danube, but in Lower Austria. And it's not close to where we had the experience, but it's like 100 kilometers away or something. Not far, but it used to be, I found that on Wikipedia, so maybe it's wrong, but it used to be, or it said used to be, an old Celtic place of worship. And when the Christians came, they built a church there, the St. Michael's Church. And I've been to the city, but I've never been to that church. And they have these special roof tiles. Just send pictures to you now. And they are called the seven rabbits or the seven hares or the seven horses. And you can have a look at them.
Wow.
I don't think that they look neither like horses nor like rabbits to me. I think they look like human faces with
the ears that are that what were the ears, because you mentioned that
they're more pointy. Like those. Mm-hmm. they're round, aren't they? Teddy bear ears, they were more pointy, but like the face was almost like this human monkey gorilla, but white, like pale. Really pale.
And like, yeah, that does kind of look monkish.
Yeah, but the body reminded me of it. It wasn't that fat and that bulky, but it was like kind of a lot of muscles and not like one of those race horses or horses you would ride for races or something. It was more like a horse for heavy labor, I would say, so, with a lot of muscles and big fur and stuff like that.
Do you think that because it sounds a little bit like a centaur as well?
Yeah, but not like with the upper. Because I only know the images of centaurs with the upper body of a man. It wasn't like that. It was like this humanoid face on this horse-like, pony-like figure. And it had, as I said, really like this shaggy, strong fur, dark and brownish. Yeah, but the face was pale and it had like this pointy, horse-like ears.
I mean, I'm just looking at that. So these figures sit atop the church,
yeah,
and as kind of gargoyles do in our kind of cathedrals and churches here.
Yeah.
So you think it's a kind of like a form of I guess protection, because you know images like this would be placed there to, you know, dispel demons, etc., etc. But I mean, it is incredibly close to the sort of being that you saw.
It
would be really interesting to see if these images are replicated anywhere else, you know, in that local vicinity.
I couldn't find anything on the internet, but who knows?
It might be somewhere.
I could find when you Google like Lower Austrian mythology and horse-like stuff. There's not a lot of folklore with connecting horses to some kind of nature spirits or something like that.
They often appear in folklore. They are sometimes related to water as well, and that can be because of the relationship between, you know, white horses and the sea, etc. The waves coming in. But they are definitely often featured in folklore, either that the good folk, the gentry, are, you know, riding horses, that the fairies will plait their manes. There's another, you know, big aspect of folklore around kind of Devon and Cornwall. So there is this relationship between fairies and horses. There's the story that this guy shared. It is called The Wretched Rider in the Thorn. I don't know if you've listened to that one, but there was a...
I did. Was that with the preacher, like...
It was on his... You know, horses, they do tend to feature strongly in the folklore and in tales, as in sort of people's first-hand experiences. And spirit horses, the idea of spirit horses galloping... So they're definitely kind of connected in with that otherworldly sense of nature, horses. Perhaps they are slightly within the worlds as well, between the worlds. Who knows? Perhaps there's an aspect of them that, that you know, wildness that can still connect with the other world, but it would be really interesting to look further into that. Yeah, so with the ears were more pointed, what sort of animal?
I would say like a horse, yeah.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Like a horse, yeah. So, yeah, and it all blended in together really well because it was one entity, it was like one creature. But it had this really weird humanoid face within the structure of the horse, I would say.
Yeah, and its mouth, would you say that that was the part that was most monkey-like then?
Yeah, because of the teeth. It was like these sharp teeth there and really prominent.
Mm.
And the nose were like, I would say, more flat than our nose, but maybe like just a very flat, big, broad nose.
Wide nose, right.
Wide nose. Flat. Yeah, yeah.
And did you get a sense of how tall it was or how tall it stood at the window there?
Yeah, because it was just like the height of the window. And I would say it must have been like 1.5 meter.
Right.
Because it could like comfortably, it was like right in front of the window and it just stared into the window. And I would say it was probably like 1.5 meter.
Mm. Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing this with me. This is absolutely fascinating, and it really does tie in with Krampus and the solstice. You know, these otherworldly beings that come to us at these times with, you know, there's a gift there. There's a gift within all of that. I'm really glad to hear that things worked out for you in the end as well, and with your work also, you know, your new love relationship that blossomed, and then the a successful work going forward. So that sounds really good. And it sounds like you're kind of open to this. Did you ever have any experiences as a child? Do you remember?
No, I didn't. No, not really. I didn't.
No.
But I was really, really close with nature. I grew up in a huge family. I had, we were 6 kids at home.
Yeah.
So when it got too busy and too noisy inside of the house, I always fled into the garden and I would climb the trees and I would hide within the trees. That was like my sanctuary as a child. I was really close to nature, spent a lot of time outside. And that was actually a part why I've finished my normal day job as a social worker because I just decided I can't spend that amount of time within office rooms anymore.
Yeah.
I want to spend more times outside and like, in a lovely environment.
Wonderful.
I'm still close with nature, I would say. But I never met like an entity, a nature spirit, if you would call it. Before that was like the only 2 times I saw them. Like there were a lot of times when I felt close to certain energies.
Mm-hmm.
I work with runes as well. Like and it's not the main part of my business. The main part is of course running boring training courses for social workers and some teaching. But I'm doing it aside of that. I'm working with, I'm casting runes, you know, and part of it is get into touch with the other person and the environment. Here are my runes.
Fantastic. Wow. So you made these yourself?
Yeah. I really cast them. Yeah. It's not like.
Could you show us? Yes.
And you know, then I, the person like, is posing a question into the room, and I pick up on that, and I have a drum as well, but I don't use a drum. The person who's having the question or wants the runes to be cast for them, they
beat the drum.
they beat the drum.
That and then is
they
pass excellent. The rooms,
and then I read them. Yeah. And that is like getting in touch with their energies as well in a very close and deep way. But again, that is more like a trance thing, but it's not like seeing a physical being. It's all in my head and on another level. But those two experiences I told you about, they were like, you could touch those entities. I didn't.
Yes. Yes.
And I was too scared to touch it, I have to say, the first one. But the second one, the moonlight horse, or lady with the moonlight horse, I would love to touch her.
Yes.
That was so beautiful, but I didn't dare to, because it was, and it wasn't, that was, wasn't far away either. It was like maybe 500 meters away. It was like not very far.
I mean, roses make nice offerings for the lady. So you could always take, I don't know if you have a garden where you are and whether you have roses in your garden, you could take roses or petals up there and you know, lay those, obviously they're organic materials. It's a nice offering to leave. Might be an idea.
Have some there.
Yes. Are those what you grow in your... Are they the...
No.
They're
husband. But yes.
Well, even better. That's a beautiful gesture if they've been given to you in love and, you know, represent the love that you have between you, then that's a really nice offering to give too, isn't it? So
I have no idea. I will do that. I need to go to my garden anywhere close to the spot, because we still have tomatoes. You can't believe it. It was like really sunny and nice. Now it's getting colder, like the last 2 days. But before that, it was like incredibly warm for October and sunny. We still have the tomatoes and red cabbage and lettuce as well.
Blimey.
I need to collect that and harvest that, because now it's getting really cold during the
night. I must say, I did the same the other day. I popped out and I found a very tiny cucumber hidden under a leaf.
Oh, God.
And then a few courgettes, tiny ones, but nevertheless, they were there, and a few tomatoes. So I've just brought them in.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
We
had another sort of sunny sweet, same as you, by the sound of it, where the sun came out and
things started growing again. It's the climate change, I think. It's not, but all horrible. And
no.
I like the thought of it might be horrible for us, like for mankind or us as human beings, but not for nature, because nature is always there and it always will be. And I was just picking up on what you just said before. It's like when you said, like, nature can be dangerous. As we are part of nature, I think we can be very dangerous as well. We just need to check the news. It's always proof in there how dangerous we are. And maybe those beings are less dangerous than we are. We are just scared of them because we're not used to see them a lot.
No. And I think if we were less concerned with ourselves and more tuned into nature itself and our place in all of this, we would not be making such stupid choices or ignorant, sort of thoughtless choices about the way we do things. But I have this hope that we are moving in the right direction. I like to think that we're moving in the right direction, but we're having a real tricky kind of birth into this new world, if you like, a new world in terms of sort of the age of Aquarius, that we're moving from the age of Pisces, the kind of ego solar plexus way of being that we've had for the last 2000 years, into age of Aquarius. But then there's this kind of Pisces energy that's like, no, we like it. You know, for some people, they like the wealth and the power and the control, right? Because they benefit from it.
Maybe they are scared of what's next
we're
to
scared.
Come.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What happens if we let go?
Yeah.
What happens if we let go? We're all like that in a way, that we're living our lives and, you know, fear leads us to think, oh, but I can't do without that thing, or I can't stop being like this because what happens? This is my identity. This is who I am. And yet if it's kind of forced from us, we find a new way. And this is where I feel like the tide is turning anyway. And there's this sort of shift between the old world trying to sort of control things. At the same time, we're seeing it crumble, because mm-hmm. it's just the tide is that we're moving to somewhere new. And so many of us are there already, and we're kind of making this new world in the way that we would like to see it, working more with nature, connecting in with each other, seeing the love that exists between us all, that there are real no boundaries, only ones that we've created, and that there is another way to be. And all the time there's this kind of crumbling old world still, you know, arguing with itself, but there's also this new world forming. And I think if we kind of place our attention there and ask for the help of nature with that too, I think we are headed there, but I think it's going to be a bit bumpy for a little bit longer, and we just have to kind of batten down the hatches, keep doing what we can do to, in our own kind of communities and with each other, express our love with each other and with nature within that space that we can, and just do what we can to help that movement. And I feel like eventually we will get there, but it's hard, and it's very hard to see all the suffering in the world at the moment.
But you're doing such a lovely job, and you're doing such an important work. And I really think you have that kind of gentle and very lovely way of pushing the world into or people into the right direction, in the sense of in the direction they have to go anyway. Yeah, and I always admire how calmly and spoken you do what you do, even though you are listening to the most crazy and amazing stories, you always keep your calm and nice way. And I really like listening to the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great work. And I really came across it by chance, really. I'm a history nerd, and I think it was The Witches of Scotland or something. I was listening to it. And, you know, Spotify always suggests you more podcasts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then it was the Modern Fairy Sightings podcast, and I was listening to it. And then, as I said before, it triggered the whole memory thing, and I had to contact you.
So interesting, isn't it? As some people do say that they, you know, say the same, that it sometimes triggers memories from childhood that they had kind of like hidden at the back, and then suddenly it's like, oh yeah, I had that happen. Well, you know, thank you for contacting me. And I have to say, you know, it's very lovely to hear your kind words about the project, but, you know, it couldn't happen without your stories. And this is where it's a sharing, isn't it? Of us just being able to come together and talk about what it's like to have these very real experiences. And then they're not hallucinations, and we're not mad. We are. It's just a very normal thing to happen, and it's kind of been cancelled that, you know, to talk about these things, that it's shameful or humiliating some way. That's just ridiculous, because we need to talk about this is important, and it's just very much part of our world, and it's good to know that it's gaining momentum, and that we, by talking about these things, we are starting to reach back out to nature and have these relationships again. So thank you for sharing.
You're
welcome. Time to rest.
Thank you to our guest for an absolutely fascinating experience. It really is quite pokey, and we can just imagine how we would feel if we looked up and saw that face at the window. What I find quite amazing is that the sign of Sagittarius runs from November the 22nd to December the 22nd, so right on the cusp of the solstice. And the symbol for Sagittarius is, of course, a half man, half horse. I couldn't help but wonder if this had some significance when I realised afterwards. The symbol of Sagittarius is meant to speak of a man's struggle to attain spiritual development rather than sink into his animal nature. This is further magnified by the bow and arrow that the archer centaur usually holds aloft in the symbol of Sagittarius. And centaurs themselves were thought to be wise, adventurous creatures in Greek mythology, but, like man's struggle, were also given to uncivilized behaviour. There are depictions of horse, man, beasts, and one of the most interesting ones is pictured in Monstrorum Historia, a book which was published in 1642 by Ulisse Aldrovandi, and it was part of an early collection on natural history. This book is really amazing, and it depicts some unusual mythical, or are they, human beings. On page 99 of that book, there's a horse with a human face, a drawing of a horse with a human face, and I've added this to the show notes. The whole book is a very strange and fascinating work, and I would recommend you take a look at that if you're interested in kind of oddities. Aside from centaurs, the other creature that I've read about is called Todorats. These are described as demons in Balkan folktales and are half human, half horse, but not the same as a centaur. They move through villages and kill people in their path by trampling them, but they usually appear at the end of winter, which doesn't fit so well with our story here. I think it's most likely, as I said, that the being appeared in response to what was going on in our guest's relationship, and, or at least it's interesting that it did appear at that time, and that they chose to go there at that time. So maybe they ended up in that creature's space rather than the creature ending up in their space. I have found that archetypes, deities, and fey beings can appear and do just this, reflecting back at us what's going on in our lives. However, it doesn't explain why children in the past had apparently seen that same creature, but on another occasion, if what they wrote in the visitor's book was correct. Of course, we don't know what time of year that happened or what was going on in their lives at the time, but it does make you wonder if this being is associated with that area or that time of year and occasionally likes to make himself known. It would be very interesting to know more about that specific area. In any case, as we know, this time of year is particularly magical, so use it. Go deep and explore. I have recently created a new pathworking for exploring our relationship with ancestors, and it is available for free on my Patreon page. You'll find it in the pathworkings collection. Let me know how that goes for you. I did it recently and it was very powerful and extremely revealing. Massive thanks to our guest for sharing his wondrous stories here. It was such a powerful visitation, and I would love to know if this being is still turning up there now and wreaking havoc for the guests of that Airbnb. And how much did the owners know? I would love to know. I would like to take this opportunity to thank you, dear listener, for listening this year, and I wish you a very merry Yule wherever you are and whomever you are spending this time with. This year has been a transformational one for the podcast, as I move into doing this full time, and for the next couple of months I'm also going to be writing my book, as the deadline is at the moment in March, so the episodes between now and March may be released as videos on YouTube, and perhaps slightly less frequent for the general public as I pour myself into meeting my writing deadline. I will still be releasing bonuses on my Patreon group though, and I've got a few lined up that I'm going to be releasing there. If you can support the show, please join us there, where you'll hear the entire full-length version of this episode, including the other experience with this being of light on a white horse. It's beautiful. Much love to you all as we step into 2024, which by all accounts will be a very different year to 2023. It's time to rise up. Trust your own mind as we still battle with all the nonsense that we're presented with out there. Look after your own health. Don't bow to anyone else's idea of who you should be. And always remain curious. There are interesting pathways ahead. Much love.